too, or visit brucejenkinsinsurance.com. And by the 13th Annual Wildflower and Nature Festival on Saturday, April 3rd at Riverbend Park in Oroville. There will be nature and craft booths, food trucks, kayaking on the Feather River, and more from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Details on Facebook at Wildflower and Nature Festival and at 533-2011. Health recommendations followed, masks required. On today's show, the bulk of our time will be spent in a discussion with writer Ken Smith on new developments in the local debate on homelessness that he wrote about in a feature from April, from the April print edition of the CNR, which hit the stands today. But first, a coronavirus update. With COVID-19 rates dropping and much of the region downgraded to California's orange tier, Butte County Public Health has expanded vaccination eligibility and opportunities. Vaccine clinics are now open to any county resident 16 or older. Shots are available through community clinics and pharmacies in Chico, Oroville, Paradise, and Gridley. Visit buttecounty.net/ph/COVID-19/vaccine. That's buttecounty.net/ph/COVID-19/vaccine for details on locations and scheduling appointments. Roughly 30% of county residents are at least partially vaccinated at this time. As of April 5th, coronavirus had sickened 11,198 in Butte County, killing 178. But after a winter surge, the spread has slowed. From March 1 to April 1, Butte County Public Health recorded 342 new cases. In contrast, the count for December 11th alone was 240, and no week's total has approached 100 cases since February. The county's most recent death came March 13th. State officials moved Butte County into the orange or moderate tier effective March 31st, loosening restrictions on businesses' indoor operations. One of the main features in this month's print edition of the CNR is the story Closed to the Public by Ken Smith. It's about a new coalition made up of Chico City Council members and Butte County supervisors and other local officials that has been meeting behind closed doors and without oversight to discuss homeless issues. As part of its work, the group has been exploring theories about the local homelessness situation that have been adopted by the conservative majority of the City Council, yet are receiving a lot of blowback from service providers and advocates alike. Ken joins us now to break down the situation.
Hey, Ken, how's it going?
Good, man.
So this group that's been meeting to talk about these homeless issues, do they have a name?
Not really quite sure. I asked that specifically of a couple people, and the best I could get is kind of the city-county homeless working group. Although Andrew Coolidge, in a follow-up email, I asked him, does the group have a name? And he said, it's just the COC, but it's not the COC in any way, shape, or form.
Who's part of this group? Who's been in attendance at these meetings?
Well, three council members, Mayor Andrew Coolidge, Sean Morgan, and Casey Reynolds, and two supervisors, Todd Kimmelshue and Tammy Ritter. All of those people kind of fall into a very specific camp as far as their views on the homeless and views on which actions should be taken, with the exception of Tammy as an outlier there. And then a lot of city staff. I know for sure there was Mark Orm.
City manager.
Yeah. And a few supervisors from county departments like mental health or behavioral health services, sorry, and DESS, employment and social services. Also representatives from Gallagher and LaMalfa's office are invited to each meeting. I'm not sure if they were in attendance. I just learned that they have an open invitation was how it was phrased.
I mean, these are meetings that were held, you know, outside of the public view, in secret, but with so many people from so many you know, segments of our community in our state, like it was inevitable that we'd find out about it. How'd you find out about it?
Well, it started with there was some interesting an email actually to a local homeless advocate that got leaked to us from Homeless Solutions Coordinator Susie Kokums that just talked about some interesting. I believe the original email that was it was a response to was, you know, some options for camping or shelter space. And it basically the email said that the council doesn't seem interested in camping and are strongly inclined not to look into shelter space because they're taking a new direction as far as some theories that they developed about the homeless. So looking into that, following up with Kokums, the group was mentioned. I'd heard some references to it in some ER reporting and in some council meetings, and I believe it was referenced at a supervisor meeting, but it was just like as a conversation we were having with the county. Yeah. You know, it wasn't definitely the scope of what's actually happening, which is, yeah, they've met three times, they meet monthly, they meet in person. It just raises all kinds of questions. And I mean, you know, there's something to be said for the state and the county and the city, and especially the city and the county collaborating and working together.
Sure.
I think there can be, you know, for the first time moving forward with some really substantive solutions there. But the fact that these meetings are happening with no service providers in the room, with no press, with no public, it raises all kinds of legal and ethical concerns and questions.
Well, yeah, I mean, it cut a lot of people all off guard, not just for the fact that there's no public invited to the meeting, but because some of the ideas on homelessness that have been presented by the group. What are the working theories that came out of those meetings that you know of?
Reportedly, basically that there is enough shelter space available, and that some of the actual verbiage used was that a significant number of the homeless population basically prefers to live an outdoor nomadic lifestyle, which I don't think in any real, I mean, there's mountains of data and research that's been done by people who actually work within these communities. And I mean, of course, there's resistance to shelter for various reasons. And resistance to certain types of shelter. There's a lot of different types of shelter for, you know, it's not a one size fits all solution or problem. So you need a variety of solutions. And I think most legitimate, credible social workers, service providers would agree that Butte County does not have an abundance of those resources.
I mean, you know, a lot of people were disagreed with those theories, including Councilmember Alex Brown, whom you talked to for your story. What was her take on all this?
Well, that also kind of drives home the concern about the legal and ethical issues of these people meeting, because Alex Brown was shocked when I told her about what I discovered. She'd never been, I mean, she said she had, like others, heard vague references to these meetings, but never any reports, never minutes, never briefings, never any sort of conversation. And so her concern being that there's things happening in these closed-door meetings between county and city staff and elected officials that are moving forward as what would be council direction or council policy, and people are being left out of the conversation.
So, I mean, one of the controversial actions to come out of this group and was discussed at the city council meeting that happened last night was to hire a newly formed local nonprofit Point of Contact to survey the unhoused people of Chico. What is Point of Contact, and why is the choice of this organization causing so much debate?
For one thing, they're a brand new organization. I mean, they were granted a $9,000 in grant funding for a contract to conduct some surveys among the homeless population. The group's four founding members that were on their website, I believe they've added another now because of some blowback that they've gotten. None of them have a background in social work or any sort of formal education in social work. Lori Maloney is the founder. She actually has a mixed reputation among advocates and service providers. She's worked with the Posse for a long time, which is a group of women that mainly collect furniture for CHAT, Jesus Center, and other transitional housing. And they do a great job. I've actually featured them in a couple stories, and they provide a needed service. However, like other people that I work with, are also say that there's, I mean, and it's apparent through the way this group expresses itself online, the way Maloney expresses herself online, and the other people involved, they have an agenda basically, and that's that kind of the old bootstraps. Hand up, not hand out. Mm-hmm. They have some pre-formulated ideas, which are basically kind of the alternative narrative that the council, the conservative portions of the council, have always advanced, sans proof or evidence or data, which is basically most of the people don't come or aren't from here. People come here because of our abundance of services.
Like, gosh,
we're just an oasis of a wonderland for the unhoused population to come from far and wide. There's no evidence to suggest these things. Chico doesn't offer an abundance of services that actually a lot of people in the homeless community, especially now, are feeling a lot of hate and persecution. So basically, a lot of the ideas that council has been advancing, but the data and the institutional knowledge rejects, basically, they've hired this group to verify. So it's confirmation bias.
That appears to be what's going on here.
Yeah, it appears. I mean, I'm still doing some reporting, but the current reporting that I'm doing seems to indicate that they've been asking some odd questions and working towards some strange ends.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR, 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. We're talking to writer Ken Smith about his story, Closed to the Public, from the current print edition of the Chico News and Review, about a dramatic turn of events in local efforts to combat homelessness. We pick up our conversation with Ken discussing the fact that the brand new point of contact nonprofit, the controversial choice of a secretive city-county group to conduct surveys of the local homeless population, has already started influencing city policies.
I think last night's meeting kind of drove home all of the points of the story, which were, there's meetings influencing decisions, and that point of contact is, you know, apparently deeply involved with some members of the city. Casey Reynolds, apparently, from my conversations with Tammy Ritter, was the one who at the secret meeting said, well, what about point of contact when there's no other service providers in the room? It's just last night's council meeting, the idea that they're not interested in camping anymore, the idea that they're not interested in shelter. Basically, at last night's meeting, there was presentations from, there was a really good one from Scott Canelli from Behavioral Health, who really laid out a lot of data and information, which the council seemed to pick and choose to justify the narrative that they've always pushed. And then also, several council members openly referenced this survey as like showing that this is true, but the survey isn't even complete yet. At one point, Cammie Denley referenced the survey Brown said, but wait, we don't even have, the survey is not even done. And Cami Denlay said, well, I called them and got their most up-to-date results. So this group is supplying data that's not even complete to city council to inform decisions. It's basically everything that the worst presumptions you could make from reading my story, I think if you watched last night's council meeting, is right there in front of everybody's eyes.
And what was their vote? What was the vote on exactly?
Oh, the vote was actually on. It was a pitch from Alex Brown to move forward with a plan at the BMX track, which has been something that's been discussed in the last year. It was part of the homeless opportunities plan. The city balked because there was a cost of moving the existing BMX track out by the airport, which would have cost $600,000. So while at the time council seemed inclined to support something there, the thing that they wouldn't get behind was the $600,000. So that kind of disappeared into the ether, as a lot of the solutions that have been proposed have. So Brown brought back a very stripped down version last night, where they would only take 4/5 of an acre there. The BMX could continue to operate. The BMX representatives actually said that's fine with them. They agree it's okay. She was looking at either camping or pallet shelters. And that could be, used as in the way that kind of like tiny houses could, or kind of okay. like a step between a tent and a tiny house.
Okay.
I guess you could say. In her plan is just to, let's explore this. It was very well represented. But as they were discussing it, Cami Denlay introduced a substitute motion that they stop looking into camping at the BMX track altogether, that they review any funds that they've already agreed. And this is what's called ESG CV grants, which are state funding that is directed directly towards COVID relief and in some form or another, which homelessness applies.
Sure.
For multiple reasons that we don't need to discuss at the moment. But she said she wanted to reevaluate any spending that they've already agreed to from those grants, and also to revoke the shelter crisis declaration that was made back in 2018. But that would have expired in June anyways, so it just feels kind of like a symbolic thing. Basically, what she said was, from the evidence that they're gathering from point of contact and from little pieces that were picked out of the presentations given by behavioral health, she determined that only 10% of the homeless population actually wants shelter. She said generous, she called it 20%. So she basically said that Chico has an obligation, or the community, Chico, the county, to house 98 people, and that there's already more shelter beds than that. So we're done. Don't need the shelter crisis. And that passed 5-2 along party lines.
Thanks, Ken, for reporting all of this, and I'm sure we'll be talking again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Jason.
Sometimes my brain is melting. My eggshell face splits in two, and a runaway yolk slithers down between my eyes, over my lips, and down to my chin.
You're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR, 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. With the news from California Governor Gavin Newsom that the state might be reopened by June 15th, comes hope that the return of in-person art and music experiences is not too far away. We still have to keep cases down, hospital beds open, and get sufficiently vaccinated. And hopefully, the promise of a return will motivate us all. For now, things are a little more open than they used to be. And during a week when most local galleries are opening new shows, some are even opening their doors to in-person viewing, albeit at a reduced capacity. At the 1078 Gallery, Stories 9, the group exhibit, has been extended through April 19th. And next up is another group show, Imagine Together, Hopeful Visions for Our Future, featuring stories, recordings, short films, dances, paintings, drawings, sculptures, and more, based on the imagination and how it can be used to make the future a hopeful, joyful, inclusive place. The show opens on April 19th, and they're still accepting submissions through April 11th, and the gallery is open for in-person viewing at limited capacity. Visit 1078, that's the numerals 1078gallery.org for more information. And at Chico State, the BFA candidates are having some of their culminating exhibits, including Angela Hartsong Redding, Marie Swanson, and Kim Schmidt. All of the shows are virtual, and you can visit the Arts Department's Facebook page at facebook.com/CSU Chico Art DEPT/events for more info, or just look up CSU Chico Art Department at Facebook. And Chico Art Center has Creative Fusion, their annual group show featuring works by Butte County's high school and junior high students. It opens on April 10th, and you can get more information at chicoartcenter.com. The gallery will be open for in-person viewing, but not until May 1st. And in downtown Chico, there is local businesses have banded together for an art walk slash show called What's Bloomin' Downtown, featuring works from more than 30 local artists showcased in the different restaurants and boutiques. Visit downtownchico.com for more information. And the Janet Turner Print Museum has a new show, Singular, Monoprints and Monotypes, a virtual exhibit honoring the expressive and individual qualities of monoprints and monotypes. Visit csuchico.edu/Turner. And over at the Museum of Northern California Art, it's Veteran Voices, Communicating Through the Language of Art, a juried exhibit featuring works by 15 artists, all veterans, including David Hopp, David Smallhouse, and Richard Whitehead. And the museum is now open to in-person viewing with limited capacity, of course, and there will be a virtual tour released as well. Visit Monca, MONCA.org for more information. Last December on this program, I declared that my favorite local album of 2020 was the excellent Aurelia by Farrah, which was released last April. It had been about 8 years between albums for the longtime Chico singer-songwriter, but now, just 1 year later, comes another, Locus Lemon. There's always been a thread of varying degrees of experimentation running through Farrah's self-recorded albums, but on this latest, that adventurous spirit is the star. It's 15 tracks of stay-at-home tinkering that is unpredictable. There are weird and meditative loops all over the place, some with distorted spoken word, as on the appropriately titled Sometimes My Brain Is Melting, which we've been listening to in between segments on today's show, and at least one with sweet, wordless humming harmonies, as on Head Spinning Next to Each Other.
La 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 la
says Locus Lehman is available for streaming and downloading at farah.bandcamp.com. Here's one more sample. Closing track, A Sky I've Been Falling Into.
Your hair is wind moving through tall grass. Your voice is an almond grove in bloom. Your dress is waves crashing on a soft shore. Your eyes are a sky I've been falling into for years. Your hands are home.
Thank you once again for tuning in to the Chico News and Review. Thank you, KZFR 90.1 FM, for hosting us each Thursday now at 5 p.m. And of course, thank you to Cat Depot for our theme music that opens and closes the show. And remember, today is print edition day. The April issue of Chico News and Review is available in racks all over Butte County. And you can, of course, find the digital version online at chico.newsreview.com. Take care.
To hear from you. Our 2021 listener survey is ready for you on our website at kzfr.org/survey and on our Facebook page. Your opinion helps guide the direction of the station. Participants can be entered into a drawing for a gift certificate to one of our local businesses. The survey is confidential and can be filled out in minutes. Have your voice heard. The survey is available until March 31st on kzfr.org/survey and on our Facebook page. We would love to hear your feedback, and we thank you for your support.
Why don't we begin?
This is Fresh Hop Cinema.
Hello and welcome to Fresh Hop Cinema, a craft beer and movie discussion based right here in Chico, California. I'm Max Minardi.
And I'm Johnny Summers. What is happening, everybody? This week on the show, we have a review of the new film Godzilla vs. Kong, starring Millie Bobby Brown.